I was going to ask you just to get my thoughts 2 years ahead of you. What are things you still want to accomplish in life? What are things you'd still like to accomplish in life? I mean, things that you've accomplished a great deal in your life and done a great deal.
Well, a lot of it, I don't have any sort of overarching goal. Mm-hmm. I tend to look at the next task and to look at when I get to sort of completion of one, well, what am I going to do now, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I must admit, I feel very blank when I sort of work my way out of one profession or something, mm-hmm. and into another. I would like to return to teaching sometime, either at the university level or, for that matter, fifth grade level. I mm-hmm. always enjoyed that. Or high school level. Probably it would be kind of difficult with certification requirements and everything like that. But there's a lot to be done in this sort of tendency of mine to look for gaps in what we have. I think I'll always keep looking for things that need to be created or filled in, like volunteer fire department mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. Go and pick a need that I see and work on it. Mm-hmm. And given the imperfectibility of humankind, I think there'll always be needs, personal or social, that will attract my attention. Mm-hmm. So I don't anticipate changing my approach and anything like that. I don't know how many years I'll be active in electoral politics. I still feel there's considerable that I can do. I've been in the minority once, I've been sort of semi in the majority once. I've never really been in the controlling group. That would be one thing. I think there are very real needs in the way that the Senate and House function. I think we need to work toward a system of responsible government, learning from the Canadian model as well as our own historical model. I think we have to develop our own. And one of the things that we've intended to do in Alaska and in Juneau is to pit the Senate against the House or vice versa, which is a very artificial kind of constraint. Mm-hmm. American political theory has the legislature checking the administration. Well, what you have is the two houses checking each other, mm-hmm. The bureaucracy going on its own merry way with no check at all, and the administration attempting to work between the two. So I think there are some needed structural changes, which don't require necessarily a constitutional change, just a change of rules on the mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. legislative part. Ideally, I think there could be some constitutional changes that would make it, the idea of going back to the people for a new election if there is, if the House or Senate cannot, the legislature cannot function because of internal disagreement. What we do now is just sit there and scream at each other like they did during the 13th legislature. And I think it would be much better to, return to the people. Mm-hmm. and have them vote and decide whether they want the same bunch of clowns back or they want a new one. Mm-hmm. But that sort of thing does, at this point, concern me. I've never really considered the length of life, and figure that very much very well that it can end at any time, so the thing is to do as best you can while you're around and not bet on a long-term mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. gamble. But that doesn't mean that I don't know, that doesn't I hope that doesn't lead to sort of short-sightedness or short-termness. I don't think so.
I don't think it necessarily does. I think it's just an awareness of how important the moment is.
Yeah.
And to do things without putting them off indefinitely, especially things of value, ethic, or things that there's no point waiting until you're in your 80s before you start to change society or make a contribution.
Well, right. Well, people do discover different things in the course of their life. I don't know what else I'm going to discover, what new tack I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
To go off on,
mm-hmm.
or any. I want to continue learning.
Mm-hmm.
There's always more. So I think there may be quite reasonably some unanticipated or undiscovered things too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll return to art. Highly unlikely.
Terrible.
Highly unlikly. I think I lack some single-mindedness or something.
I often think that I'm probably very single-minded. But, anyway, okay. I think that, you know, there's endless things I'd like to talk to you about, but I think that if the fact that I'm not writing a book, I am trying to have a relatively succinct little thing. And so unless there's anything you think of particularly that you would like to have on this tape, or given this opportunity to have your voice go down to posterity?
I'm not sure. One of the things that's really given me a great deal of pleasure is seeing how our children have turned out, our five kids, my grandchildren.
Okay.
Because being, you know, all being born up here at Old St. Joseph's and going to Fairbanks School and growing up on the homestead, and they were somewhat isolated. You know, that, and they are all totally different people.
Mm-hmm.
But I just get a great deal of pleasure out of knowing them and seeing the different ways they've turned out, and I think that, and I think one of the really sort of interesting people things about it is that they do all, you know, like each other, and they do hang together and maintain a relationship, family relationship, among the five of them, and also that most of them are. They all work very hard in their own ways. I don't think that everybody always credits Alex. Even Alex, who takes things easy for a lot of the time, works very hard on the things he's interested in. I think
that reminds me
they are so different. I mean, that's one of the striking things. You know, they're all brothers and sisters, and they share a common path, but they've become very totally individual, I mean, quite different from one another.
One thing that makes me think of is, you mentioned you growing up in Alaska and growing up in a homestead. Do you think, you know, again, these sort of phrases, I was going to say trite, but not really trite, but do you think we're very much shaped by our environment here, or do you think we shape our lives? Or so could you say the land shapes the people, or the people shape the land, in a sense that we are very, very tied to the land.
You know, Robert Frost said, you know, the land was ours for 100 years before we were the land's.
Mm-hmm.
But especially, I think, in territorial days, that was one of the striking things about Alaska, and I think in an attenuated form still is, that the reason that you know, social conventions and rules and everything and expectations were less important, at least when you were out of town, was that the discipline that we were subjected to was the discipline of the seasons and of the land itself, and that was such a real presence that, you know, conventions were less important. that we developed conventions in response to that, you know, the sharing, picking up people, inviting them to the sauna, you know, the providing each other help when any of the sort of barn-raising pioneer thing. And some of that has tended to fade, partly with, you know, the fact that pioneering isn't the thing anymore, and also that Alaska was rather abruptly transported from the sort of pre-World War I world that we were in through the 50s to a very modern age, with the coming of television and better roads and automobiles and that kind of thing, and that there was a real change in the sort of land ethic. You know, before we belonged to the land, now everybody has their own little private, no trespassing, keep out kind of acreage approach, mm-hmm. which wasn't true before. It's really remarkable kind of difference in that regard. I think Alaska has become more like the rest of the states and is more affected by the trends and fads in the rest of the states. And people tend to come for shorter lengths of time and try to live a stateside life and leave. That's a strange sort of reinforcement of it. I think, you know, industry brings its own people up here. And that was especially evident, you know, in that sort of surge of in the mid-60s of the population of people moving up here. This is why I don't like artificial population movements like the movement of troops in and out. In fact, that was one of the things that they let the troops vote on statehood. I think that artificially inflated the pro-statehood figures. That was like the Russian troops voting on annexation to the Soviet Union of Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. You know, they were allowed to vote too. They had elections. I'm overstating that, but it does change the character of the place. But more of it is that, you know, we're trying to Los Angelize much of, certainly Anchorage has gone that way, and Fairbanks with the decay of the central part of town and and the malls coming up, that's more. Although none of the malls are the kind of places that the kids can hang out in like they do in San Fernando Valley. I haven't noticed any Valley girls gag me with a spoon, thank God. People worry about sort of uniformity all around the world. I think that there is going to be a greater degree, but I don't think you can ever get a uniform culture. You get all kinds of changes in parts and pieces. The changes may be more, differences may be more subtle. So I think that, you know, I cannot see how the weather can fail to continue to influence us. And the distances in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. No, these things really can never change. Really.
Yeah.
So it would be like Silicon Valley.
I suppose, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, high tech is appropriate for Alaska, I don't think we'll necessarily do it in the same way.
Getting back to your children for just a minute, I personally have a lot of joy in my son, and I think children certainly broaden one's whole perspective, and it's nice to hear you say how well your family gets along with that, because I think that these are core things that are very important as you go along. You don't often think about and say, but they're the things that sort of hold us together. And there's other things. What things would you say held you together in life that you've hung on to? That are always there no matter what else happens?
Oh. I don't know. I think partly it's a sort of sense of identity. You know, the background, having grown up in a different life. It's kind of almost inappropriate because a lot of very conservative people say, oh, you know, my faith told me to get it. Well, I have to say that yes, I did. I mean, the particular sort of Quaker faith that I arrived at is very important to me. And it gives me some touchstone to judge what I do by, and that sort of held me together. But also, you know, the feeling of continuity of I am what I am a development out of what I started out to be and what my parents, my grandparents are. I exist through time. I'm not just a sort of role that I adopt for a particular job or a time. That's one of the things about compartmentalization. People do seem to, you know, they pass for something else. I'm complicated enough, I don't have to pass for something else anyway, or pretend to be something I'm not. I'm, you know, what I am is undefined enough. So that's one part of it. And friendship. The people I'm with, always finding people I can be close to and from whom I can gain strength. Whom I can work with. Working together with people is very important to me. I think, you know, in some ways, I suppose I'm very much of a loner, but also I get greater joy out of doing something useful with others than I do of creating something on my own. I'm not one of these ars pro gratia artis people, or self-expression. I don't have that particular kind of urge to, you know, impose myself or to express myself. Maybe I haven't been repressed enough or something. Who knows?
Okay.